Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No more, Mr. Nice Guy. No more, Mr. Clean. No more, Mr. Nice Guy. They say he's sick, he's a sick.
From heavy metal to five irons, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, how musicians are teeing up on the golf course in droves. In a moment, we'll talk to a writer at Golf Digest, but first, we're joined by Alice Cooper, the rock icon who invented shock rock and whose infamous stage shows featured guillotines, electric chairs, fake blood, and boa constrictors, is also a rabid golfer. When he's not touring or recording, he's a fixture on the Pro-Am tournament circuit. Alice Cooper has a new memoir out about how he traded booze for birdies. It's called Alice Cooper, Golf Monster, a rock and roller's 12 steps to becoming a golf addict. And he joins us today on the phone from Maui. Alice, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
So you started golf in the early 70s, I guess, but it seems to have become, you're right, it became really important to you after going through rehab in the late 70s and early 80s. How did that work out?
Well, I started playing just out of boredom. You know, I mean, you're in a different city every day, and you sit in your hotel room and you don't work till 9 o'clock that night. So, I just went out with a bunch of friends of mine that were on the tour, and you know, I'd never hit a golf ball in my life, but I was a good baseball player. So I said, just show me how to hold this thing, and I hit a 7-iron, I think, right down the middle with a little draw on it, and I said, well, that's not so hard. And I think I was immediately addicted right then. But
So it was love at first swing.
Yeah, it kind of was. At the same time, at that time, I was still drinking a lot of beer, and I just really didn't care about the game. Now, when I went to the hospital and came out healed from alcoholism, I really needed to fill those hours out. My normal day was waking up in the morning. My first motion of my body was to... Next to my bed was an ice chest full of beer. I would open that, take a drink, open my eyes, and that's how I started the day. Now you have to figure out, I'd get up in the morning and I'd go, okay, coffee, and I'm on the tee at 6:30. The very first year of my life, of my golf career, I was literally on the course for 10, 11 hours a day. I'd play 36 holes. And then practice.
So when
that killed the whole day. I mean, that which was great.
Yeah. So when you subtitle the book, you know, a rock and roller's 12 steps to becoming a golf addict. I mean, you know, psychologists will talk about an addictive personality where you become addicted to something. Is this just a way for you to channel that kind of personality into something that's not destructive?
I am the most addictive human being on the planet. Luckily, I didn't smoke cigarettes, or I would have smoked 6 packs a day. I still, at this point, drink probably at least 10 to 12 Diet Cokes a day. You know, if you like television, well, I have 27 televisions in my house. I've been married 31 years. I've never cheated on her. Everything I do is, like, extreme, you know. So I had to make sure that what I was doing was a positive thing. And, you know, I mean, if you're going to play golf, then take lessons with Johnny Miller. Take lessons with John Daly, Rocco Mediate. If you're going to play, be a great player.
We're speaking with Alice Cooper. His book is Alice Cooper, Golf Monster. The fact that you were one of the first rockers to really adopt the game put you in some pretty surreal situations. There's a photo in the book of you on the Mike Douglas show in 1974. You, Mike Douglas, and the actor Peter Falk, and you're there in your snakeskin boots and your black leather pants, and you've got the putter in your hand. And did you ever feel out of place? Was there a challenge being accepted at golf clubs?
I always wanted to put Alice Cooper in a place where he didn't belong. I always loved the idea of Alice being on Hollywood Squares because he just didn't belong there. He was sort of the sty in the eye, and I was forcing Alice Cooper on the public. You know, and the very fact that here's this guy that was, at the time, Marilyn Manson times 10, you know, being on a golf course was just terrifying to people.
Well, I mean,
so
the irony
is up there, and then on top of it, he can shoot 75 or 76.
So it's bad enough that you're out on this course with the parents of the kids who are shocked by your behavior on stage,
right?
And then you're beating them out there on the fairways.
Yeah, see, that was the great weapon. a kid would come to me and he would say, "My dad won't let me come to your concert," and I said, "Okay." I said, "You can either do this two ways. Tell your dad that Alice Cooper challenges him on a golf course. If I win, you get to go to the concert." You know, I would win 90% of the time.
Now, did this really happen? Did you actually do that?
Oh, no, no, no. I said, that's what you need to do. You know, either that, or if he says you're just not going to go, say, "Oh, by the way, Dad, Alice can take you apart on a golf course." That really hurts. Then you're in his corner, and he's sitting there going, "That really makes me mad that Alice can beat me at my own game."
Well, what did it do for your credibility with your fans? I mean, let's face it, golf in the 1970s was associated with some pretty horrendous fashion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I had to be a closet golfer. Honestly, I had my hair tied back, up into a hat, sunglasses on, you know, head down, out there playing, and I'm addicted, so I do play every day, you know. And believe me, for a long time there, we never mentioned the G word in interviews. And then it got to the point where it broke wide open. VH1 had a tournament called the Fairway to Heaven. And all of a sudden, all these guys kind of came out and went, "Yeah, you know, we kind of play golf too." And you found out that Bob Dylan played golf, Neil Young played golf, Lou Reed played golf. All of the underground heavies all played golf. Iggy Pop, Roger Waters, you know. And then I found that after that, I think once those names were out, we were out of the closet or out of the locker, then all of a sudden every heavy metal band had three or four guys that played golf.
So it became the thing to do all of a sudden.
It was the cool thing. We basically hijacked the game.
We're speaking with Alice Cooper. His book is called Alice Cooper, Golf Monster, A Rock and Roller's 12 Steps to Becoming a Golf Addict. He is performing at Jones Beach on September 8th. And back in 1973, when he was first making his unexpected appearances out on the golf courses, we were listening to songs like this. Well, the man who was worried that your little head would come off in his hands would then go out on the links and pick up a golf club in those very same hands. Alice Cooper is my guest on Soundcheck, author of the book Alice Cooper, Golf Monster, with the twin brothers, Keith and Kent Zimmerman, who helped write the book. And he's joining us from Maui. It's pretty early in the day there. Alice, have you already been out and shooting a few holes?
No, that would be a little bit too early. It's 8 o'clock here, but yeah, I definitely have a tee time around 10:30 today. and when I'm on tour, you know, if in the United States especially, I think we did 92 shows last year, and I played 72 times. So,
wow.
And when I'm at home off tour, I play 6 days a week.
So
I've turned it into a, you know, I'm just trying to make the game more violent, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, it seems to me that there is the seed of a really interesting sport in golf, because you play as a foursome, right?
So yeah, you play a foursome. You know, I'll go out there, and if there's nobody there, I'll play by myself. I'll just play against the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger Woods says Alice plays three times more than I do.
So you know Tiger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, you meet all those guys because you play You know, on those tournaments, you play the Phoenix Open and the Bob Hope and the AT&T and, you know, all of those big tournaments. And, yeah, you play with everybody.
Mm-hmm. And what is your handicap?
I'm a 4 right now.
All right. And what does that mean?
Well, that means that I will shoot 4 strokes over par.
Okay.
The normal handicap in America, I think, is somewhere around 19.
And you're a 4, so you're getting pretty good there.
I'm a hired gun.
Golf Digest actually ranks you 11th on its top 100 of music of musicians and music figures who are playing golf. That ranks you a little bit below Kenny G. What are we going to do about
Kenny,
that, Alice?
Kenny can play, and there is a definite, you know, feud going on there. Even though we're good friends, it's, you know, it's very, when we play the Michael Douglas tournament, that's always the big feud. I mean, he'll win, I'll win, he'll win, I'll win. You know, it just depends on who's putting better that day. But when you're a 4 handicap, yeah, you every once in a while you can shoot 69 or 70 or 71, something like that.
So you, Alice Cooper, are friends with Kenny G, Mr. Smooth Jazz.
Yeah, not on a musical sense.
Okay.
That would be
wrong.
Would be about as far away as you could possibly get on that level. But when it comes to golf, when you tee up, you find out that that's the common denominator right there. I have actually teed up on a tee, you know, and with the president of a CEO of a major company, a guy that you would never associate with, and at that point you never even think about what your job is. You're only worried about getting that ball in the hole.
Well, that may be the case now, but, you know, when you began, I'm sure there must have been other golfers kind of looking askance at you and saying, what's this guy doing here in our foursome?
Yeah, and when they do, they kind of like, after about the fourth hole, when you're, you know, 2 under, all of a sudden that just goes away.
I see. All right.
And they're going, hey, listen, you want to be my partner next week in the in my local, you know.
In the local tournament, yeah.
Absolutely. If they got to, you know, because they want to see you coming. In the beginning, here I am with the hair down the middle of my back, and I am Alice Cooper. So I was a total sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I looked like that, but I could shoot 77, 76, and nobody would ever expect, they'd never see you coming.
So what is the greatest length that you've gone to squeeze in a game while you've been on the road or in the studio or whatever?
Oh, there's been many times when I'd get up in the morning and I'd say, what time is the flight? And they'd say, well, it's at 9 o'clock. And I'm thinking, I could get 4 holes in. You know, you don't have to play 18. As long as you can get 3 or 4 holes in, then you've kind of like fixed your Jones there.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was a time in Moscow when I'm, you know, of course you want to go see Moscow and see the city. But at the same time, somebody says, you know, the Moscow Country Club is only about 10 minutes away. And I'm sitting there going, Moscow Country Club? I need a shirt from that place. You know, of course you're going to go play the Moscow Country Club.
Well, I can certainly understand how the attraction to somebody, as you said earlier, you were a pretty good baseball player as a kid. When the first time you really catch hold of the golf ball and you suddenly see something that you've hit travel 450, 500 feet, and you feel like Barry Bonds, you know?
Yeah, I call it the crack of sports, because it's just like being an alcoholic. You always are trying. If you hit a good ball, that addicts you. That means that you're going to stand there and hit 20 bad balls just to hit another one like that first one.
Mm.
And if you ask any addict, they're always going to say, yeah, the very first time I ever had a drink and I got that golden buzz, I will drink 50 times just to go back and try to find that golden buzz. It's very, very closely associated with addiction.
Well, it's actually interesting and also amusing in the book to kind of see you draw these parallels between your addictions, the very dangerous one to alcohol, and now this one that really has turned your life around to golf. Are there also similarities between golf and music? I mean, why are all these musicians suddenly is there something in the game that appeals to musicians?
I think that there's a certain rhythm in the game, and especially I find that most musicians at some point, or guys that are in rock bands, were athletes. When they were in high school or when they were in elementary school, almost every guy that I've ever had in a band was either a basketball player or this or that. And surprisingly, you get off stage, you get on the tour bus, and the guy with the most tattoos and the longest hair, the very first thing that comes on TV is ESPN,
right,
to see how his team did. So you're finding that a lot of rockers are jocks.
Well, there's a lot of stamina involved in the touring and, you know, the constant performing. I mean, wailing away at the drums, you got to have a certain amount of upper body and lower body strength.
Well, here's also the amazing thing about it. Let's say the Phoenix Open. If you're low handicapper or something, like even a high handicapper, and you get into a pro-am, and I'm sure you've played them before,
where
you walk onto the golf course, and there's a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, your whole body, it tenses up. Because you can play with four guys, but all of a sudden there's 150 people watching you tee off. Well, if you even get that ball off the tee, you're doing great. Now, with an entertainer, you have a choice of becoming an introvert or an extrovert. I immediately flip the switch on. At the Phoenix Open, there's 100,000 people at the Pro-Am. And so I look at that and I go, I switch that thing on and go, okay, now I'm going to really play good. The last time I played the Phoenix Open, I shot 1-under-71 with 100,000 people there with 6 birdies because there were that many people there. Now, if there would have been nobody there, I probably would have shot 76, 77.
Because it gets that entertainment, that adrenaline going.
It does. It switches on the entertainment thing, and what that does, it makes you focus better.
We're speaking with Alice Cooper. A final question. You're working on a new album, a concept album, apparently, called Along Came a Spider, about a serial killer.
I've done 3 or 4. You know, I usually do one concept album to every 4 rock albums. And, of course, even the concept album will be all rock and roll. And Welcome to My Nightmare was a purely rock and roll album. And you know, so was Brutal Planet and Dragon Town. They were conceptual albums. This album is going to definitely be character-oriented. Very Jack the Ripper type of story.
Any room for golf in that story?
The funny thing about it is Alice Cooper, the character, and golf never meet.
Uh-huh.
Alice Cooper just hates golf. The character that I play on stage, if you put golf clubs on his stage, he would just look at them as weapons. You know, he wouldn't look at them as golf, and you would never find him on the golf course. But me, of course, I'll play golf, but he wouldn't.
We've been speaking with Alice Cooper, self-described golf monster. His book, Alice Cooper, Golf Monster, A Rock and Roller's 12 Steps to Becoming a Golf Addict, is out now, and Alice Cooper will be here in the New York area September 8th at Jones Beach. Alice, thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It was great.
And still to come, we'll speak with Jaime Diaz from Golf Digest about the motley crew of rockers who are invading the links these days, and then live music in our studio from singer, songwriter, and guitarist John Doe. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. As we just heard, for Alice Cooper, golf is more than just a hobby. And the same seems to go for lots of other musicians, from Motley Crue's Vince Neil to Pink Floyd's Roger Waters to Adrian Young, the drummer of this band, No Doubt. He recently announced he was taking time off from the band, in fact, to devote his energies to the game. Joining us now is Jaime Diaz, senior writer at Golf Digest and Golf World magazines. Jaime, with Alice Cooper and Iggy Pop and this wave of rockers invading the fairways, has that helped or hurt the image of the game of golf?
Well, I think it's helped it tremendously because it's opened up those areas of golf that you know, used to be considered, you know, sort of stiff and conservative and Republican and plaid pants. And when rockers do it, it kind of legitimizes all of it and validates it and says, this is actually a game worth trying. And then usually the game sells itself when you take away the trappings of the game, or at least the traditional kind of biases and trappings that the game holds in most people's mind, and just have somebody hit the ball and watch it fly through the air. That ends up producing golfers.
Now, you know, Alice Cooper was saying that he's a really addictive personality, and for him this was a really useful thing to channel his addiction from alcohol into golf. What do you suppose is the reason for all these other musicians who, just like it seems in the past 20 years, are flocking to the golf courses?
Well, I think there's a lot of similarity in what Alice says and what pertains to other musicians. You know, it's an obsessive art, music. It takes a compulsive personality, an addictive personality, to get really good at an instrument. And so, again, there's a substitution factor there, I think. I think also it's a contrast from their normal environment. I mean, they're touring, they're on stage, they're in rehearsal, everything's dark, everybody's smoking, it's loud. And golf is the antithesis of that, and it kind of purifies their environment a little bit, and they end up, you know, getting some nice balance and some solitude and some time to think. You know, this guy, even the opera singer, Thomas Hampson, he plays golf for that very reason. I think that is something very important to them, and it's sort of a discovery. They didn't know it, as Alice was alluding to. You know, you didn't say the G word. I mean, that was a golf and was the equivalent of saying sellout to a rock musician in the 80s. But it's been validated, it's okay.
But it wasn't always that way. I mean, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, you know, 1950s, it was kind of, it was just part of the whole Rat Pack image, you know? So what happened? It didn't disappear. What did it just go underground for 20 years or so?
Well, the culture changed. I mean, I'm not a historian, but it's certainly the, you know, the 60s and the counterculture and the summer of love and all that, and the hippies, you know, changed the mentality of our country. And the predominant thinking about golf changed, I think. You know, what had been a very staid Eisenhower kind of, you know, mentality became an anti-Vietnam, anti-war demonstration, protest, anti-establishment mentality, and golf didn't fit that. And so golf kind of went into recession, so to speak, I think, all through the 70s as far as being a cool thing to do. And it just kind of, Alice was really crucial, actually, to making musicians like it. And then other athletes started to like it a lot. And, you know, there's kind of a tie between musicians and athletes. They say a lot of musicians want to be athletes and a lot of athletes want to be musicians. And they started teaming those guys together in tournaments. And that made golf a little more cool, too, because, you know, there's a lot of jocks out there who play golf, but there are a lot of people who were resistant to golf because, you know, they thought musicians and people they thought were cool did not think it was cool. When they found out they did, again, it took some barriers down.
So, 1986, Huey Lewis released this album called Four, and featured the song Hip to Be Square, which, if not specifically about golf, I mean, seemed to kind of fit the mold, the image, as
it
was.
Summarizes, yeah, the whole theme there, yeah.
Let's hear a little bit from Huey Lewis.
I used to fool around, but I couldn't take.
Huey Lewis's Hip to Be Square was from the 1986 album Four, which sort of unveiled his love of the sport of golf. From Golf Digest magazine, we're speaking with senior writer Jaime Diaz. Jaime, you have this top 100 golfers in music that we were talking with Alice Cooper about. He's ranked number 11. Number one is Kenny G. Lots of country artists on this list, and a few rappers, I mean, Snoop Dogg and people like that. So it's not just older musicians who are making their way to the clubs and the links.
No, I think it cuts across all music. I think the country guys tend to play a little bit more golf, you know, it being sort of southern and maybe a little more conservative. They're more easily folded into the game. But the rockers, especially out in California, play a lot, and the rappers are probably the newest ones to it. But yeah, it's kind of a cool thing to do. I think, you know, the aesthetic of golf is, I mean, those guys are artists, most of them, and just the idea of playing golf and hitting a golf ball and making a curve and do the things you wanted to do is an art form to a lot of guys who are sort of athletically predisposed, and I think also it appeals to musicians who, as Alice was alluding to, a lot of them have a kind of a sports background. So I think the, you know, the artistic kind of aesthetic that golf presents, and it does for a lot of athletes. I mean, a lot of pro athletes in their spare time play golf. It's like their favorite sport. Because of that, I think it's just the beauty of the game, and I think that's universal, and it does capture musicians.
Well, now, golf can also be a very expensive sport to pursue. At some point, does this become, you know, yet another example of conspicuous consumption by musicians who've made it big enough to have the really fancy, you know, the bling and the cars and the huge mansions and stuff? Is the really fine set of clubs and the access to exclusive country clubs all part of that same thing?
Well, it certainly can be. I mean, there's no doubt golf's very expensive, and these guys have unlimited funds, and they live it up. A lot of them trade, you know, concert tickets for access to some of the really expensive golf clubs when they're on the road. But, you know, I choose to believe more so that musicians just like the game. I mean, Graham Nash was a great interview, and he's got plenty of money, I'm sure. But as he said, I love the game, I don't love the trappings. And he just loves, you know, he lives in Hawaii, and he goes out and plays. He belongs to an expensive club, but I think he plays alone a lot, and it's almost like a zen experience for him. So there's two different forces going on there. I think the ones who really love the game, it's not about belonging to an expensive place. It's about belonging to a place where they love the beauty of it, and they have the freedom to just play when they want to.
It's interesting you mentioned Graham Nash and how he said he likes the game and not the trappings that go with it. I'm wondering, you know, musicians generally don't like, especially rock musicians, you know, you don't expect them to come to a golf club, you know, to a country club or the golf course and, you know, automatically start adopting all of the old-fashioned etiquette and all the stuff that goes along with it. I mean, are they changing the behavior out on the fairways as well?
I think there's a give and take there. I think the places where these guys play have liberalized their approach and their rules and realize, hey, this is an artistic guy. I mean, this guy, Adrian Young, has got pink hair half the time, but he's a hell of a golfer. And the same thing with Alice. And I think, for his part, Alice respects the real traditions of the game, and he, you know, he doesn't go out there swearing or you know, impeding other people's play. And you know, if he happens to wear his shirt untucked or does something that's kind of one of those uptight, trivial golf rules, they let it go. So I that's why I think it's been good for the game. It's kind of opened it up and liberalized it and made what's important, you know, the focus, and not all these, you know, small petty things that have tended to keep people out of the game.
Are there clubs that still won't allow rock musicians?
Well, I mean, there have been traditionally, you know, clubs that don't allow any entertainers. I mean, Los Angeles Country Club, you know, would never let an actor in, right in the heart of Hollywood. And I think Randolph Scott got in because he finally said, "Have you ever seen me act?" But, you know, so that's not unusual. But sure, there are uptight clubs, of course. I'm not going to pretend that golf doesn't have that. But I think in general, if Alice Cooper calls up Cypress Point or Winged Foot or, you know, a really top 100 traditional classical golf club, they're going to be proud to have him play there.
All right, we'll leave it there. Jaime Diaz is senior writer with Golf Digest and Golf World magazines. Jaime, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Pleasure, John. Thanks.
Still to come on his latest album, John Doe sings about ghosts in hotel rooms, the great state of California, and the meanest man in the world. We'll find out how they all wound up on his CD, A Year in the Wilderness. John Doe plays live in our studio next. This is Soundcheck, and here's Loudon Wainwright's Golfin' Blues.
Mr. Jones shot a eagle. Mr. Smith shot a par. Mr. Green shot a bogey. Down drinking in the clubhouse bar.